Today on the AV Podcast, I invite DJ Chris Nice from My Lime Radio and actor Dennis Barham to the show as we break down the greatest 2 weeks in hip-hop history. All right, so 25 years ago, November 9th to be exact, two classic albums dropped, A Tribe Called Quest's Midnight Marauders and Wu-Tang Clan's Enter the 36 Chambers. And if that wasn't seismic enough, on November 23rd, 2 weeks later, Snoop Doggy Dogg's Doggy Style was released, and those three albums went on to affect the culture in, I mean, let's face it, just in too many ways to mention. So we're here not only to discuss the albums and its impact, but we also break down that period in hip-hop overall, which at the time was the peak of the golden era for the culture of hip-hop, and so much more. I also had a chance to write a collaborative blog post on this series for my website about 5 years ago, so you can pull it up in the archives, extensively breaking down each three albums. Shout out to Kevin W., friend of the South Shirai family, as well as Jason Farrell, who helped with the write-up. We definitely put our blood, sweat, and tears into that write-up. It's definitely one of my favorite posts. We spent a lot of time on that. I think one of us might have lost the use of the hand after, you know, after all that typing. Jason, I hope you're doing okay. Anyways, only check it out after you check this podcast. All right, so stay right here. We got a good one for you. South Shirai is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Specifically, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, as well as Spotify. All right, so make sure you listen and subscribe to that. And to make sure you check out my entire catalog of podcast shows and more, make sure you subscribe and go check out SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. Let's go.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast, where we'll be discussing the greatest 2 weeks in hip-hop history. My first guest is an actor who was recently on with me on the season premiere of The Stoop. On the season 3 premiere of The Stoop, where we were discussing the 20th anniversary of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And he's also fresh off the stage performance of A Little Black Lie. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Dennis Barham to the show. What's good, brother?
What's going down? I appreciate it. Always do.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And my next guest was riding shotgun on the season finale of The Stoop, where we hosted Problem Child. You can catch his Grooves and Rhythms mix show every Friday on My Lime Radio from 2 to 4 p.m. Please welcome back DJ Chris Nice to the show. What's good, sir?
Hey, what's up? What's up, people? I'm good. Glad to be back, as always.
So we're here to discuss the 25th anniversary of one of the greatest moments in hip-hop history. On November 9th, 1993, two iconic albums were released on the same day. A Tribe Called Quest's third album, Midnight Marauders, and Wu-Tang Clan's debut album, Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers. Both albums helped change the hip-hop landscape and started to spark an East Coast renaissance again in hip-hop. Exactly 2 weeks later, Death Row Records released Snoop Dogg's debut album, Doggy Style, which sent Snoop into superstardom, and it had the same impact that the two other albums had. Now, before I continue, what are your thoughts on that event, looking back on it now? Dennis, I'll start with you.
Okay. So, when A Tribe Called Quest first came out, the album was off the chain to me. I was more of a New York kind of, like I said to everybody, like a New York kind of like core kind of hip hop kind of guy.
Right.
And so it took me by shock that I've never heard these musical instruments fused with hip hop. So I listened to the whole album over and over and over and over again. I didn't like West Coast music at all. I wasn't really an NWA fan. I didn't listen to that. Right. But when Snoop Dogg came out, I was like, when Shiznit, that's the first song I heard. And I was like, oh my God, who is this guy? And it transcended from there to, I'm going to start listening to NWA and the West Coast. And then 36 Chambers was more like of a shock to me as well, because it wasn't a typical New York type of style, and it came out of nowhere to me. And every track was good, and it incorporated like music, beats, good lyricists all the way through, like top to bottom. So all three albums were fully classic, coincidentally in the same 2 week period.
Nice.
What are your thoughts, Chris?
Oh man, this brings back some amazing memories for me, man. Because back then I used to get my records like sent straight from New York. Like they would ship it out to me because I was doing like radio and all that. So I remember getting the Wu-Tang album and thinking, I remember looking at the album and thinking, man, these guys are like a basketball team. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
How did these guys make money? You know what I mean? I'll never forget that. That was my first thought with Wu-Tang. I was like, yo, like, and then I remember I put it on, one of the first songs I remember listening to off this album was Can It All Be So Simple?
Right.
Uh-huh. And right away that bass line, it was a wrap for me. It was a wrap. I was done. Once I heard that bass line. Now, I'm not really a fully underground hip hop kind of guy, so certain songs I didn't gravitate to, but that song pulled me. Of course, you know, Protect Your Neck to this day to me is like, forget it. Like,
yeah.
Off the chain, yeah. Like thick,
yeah.
You know, especially when Meth comes in. I mean, my goodness. So that album for me was just unbelievable. And then at the same time, with Tribe dropping, that Tribe album to me, it's like, again, I don't even know where to start on that. I really don't. You know, I mean, just, you know, ridiculous. When I think back at that album, I think I ended up getting two copies. They shipped me two copies by mistake, and I didn't correct them. You know what I'm saying? I tucked it aside, and I mean, some of the songs that you couldn't really play at clubs too much, like they didn't gravitate too much to, like the ladies and stuff, like, you know, like Suck a Nigga, you know, Midnight, certain tracks. But those were like my joints. You know,
classic.
Steve Biko to me was, I used to just bang that in a car constantly. I mean, that album to me was insane. Now going to the Snoop album now, when the Snoop one dropped like a week or whatever later, believe it or not, it didn't really grab me at first. Because the first track I remember they were pushing hard, that I remember, it was What's My Name.
Yeah.
You didn't like that?
I didn't like it either.
Really?
No, it didn't get me. It didn't pull me.
It's probably the last song I like. Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, it didn't pull me. But I think Gin and Juice had dropped before that, like with Dre, right?
That song came out first. Well, we heard of that song first.
Yeah, so I was still going off the Gin and Juice. The Gin and Juice was like blowing up parties.
Right.
So when they sent out the Snoop album, I remember them sending like a note and stuff, like asking to push the Who Am I? But for some reason, it didn't really grab me. And then not Gin and Juice. Did I say Gin and Juice?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I was coming, like, we were riding off G-Thing, but then when I heard when I heard Gin and Juice, I was like, okay, I need to listen to this album.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Gin and Juice is what more pulled me in, and of course, Ain't No Fun, Doggy Style to me was sick.
Yeah.
You know, but I remember them, again, I remember them pushing Who Am I, but it didn't grab me. Even to this day, I think Who Am I is just okay.
Yeah, it just probably was overplayed as well, too. You know what I'm saying? So it was overplayed everywhere, and it was just a song. It wasn't really catchy to me either as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But Gin and Juice to me, Doggy Style and Ain't No Fun, man, what? To this day? Come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, man. I'm like the opposite. I feel like they don't even play that song enough anymore.
Really?
I'm talking about Who Am I? I'm talking about, What's My Name? Like, I rarely hear that song. It's funny. At one of my boys' weddings this year, I remember the DJ played that song, and I was like, whoa, I haven't heard this in about 15 years. What the hell, you know? I don't know. I love that record, personally. But for me, like, I guess, I think I was like in the ninth, 10th grade when this, I think, no, sorry, I was in the 10th grade when this, when those three albums dropped. And it was like the Snoop, when Doggy Style dropped, that was an event. Like, I remember that being like, everybody had to have that album. Like, everybody had it. Like, the rockers had it, you know, the nerds had it, the girls had it, the ball players, everybody had to like have it. They had to, you know, double copy on their Maxwell tape. you know, pop the tab off, you know, once they were done. Like, everybody had to have that. But I remember, like, hip-hop heads, like, if you're a true hip-hop head, then you were the ones that gravitated to the Midnight Marauders and the 36 Chambers. But, like, for me, like, it's, you know, when it comes to Tribe, like, I always love Tribe. Always love Tribe Called Quest, you know? And, but even at that age, you know, I was a little, I wouldn't say too young, but, like, some of their stuff went over my head. Like, especially, like, the first album, the People in, you know, the Instinctive Travels and all that, that album, like, that kind of went over my head. As much as I love, like, Beneath an Apple Bomb and all that stuff, it went over my head a bit. I was, like, you know, like, just coming out of elementary school, so it wouldn't gravitate to be the same. But, like, you know, Low End Theory, I love Low End Theory. I think Midnight Marauders, to me, was like, I'm not saying all three of these albums weren't masterpieces, but that one, I think, when I look back on all of them, that one gravitates to me, like, the most. Because, like, and it's probably the one album, like, I still play to this day, like, out of the three. That's the one I still, like, you know, every few months is, yeah, I gotta pull that album out, or I gotta, you know, pull it up on Spotify and listen to it. Thinking back on those times, to me, it's just, I think it was just reflective of just music as a whole, like, black music as a whole back then. Because I think it was like the, and you guys can, I know you guys agree with this, this was like truly the golden era. This is like the peak of the golden era of, like, hip-hop music. And you can even throw R&B in there as well. But especially hip-hop, I think it was just a crazy time. It was just a...
Yeah.
I appreciate the fact that you have three types of genre of hip-hop, with West Coast and the hard cutting edge of Wu-Tang, and then the Midnight Marauders and, you know, Tribe, their jazz kind of hip-hop fusion. And they were so good, and they were so influential at one time. And 25 years later, we could celebrate it because they were that influential. Music nowadays being made, we're not going to remember 25 years from now. We're not going to have a celebration for one song or what sort of thing, you know? So the era that the music was made, it was such a diverse hip-hop pool. And they were all good in different styles of hip-hop. And anybody that liked all three, I could appreciate their musical ear or their hip-hop ear, because it was just such a, all three were good albums. Even the tracks from top to bottom, was the production, everything was just really nice about all three albums. And to get it all at once like that was incredible. That was a good time in hip-hop.
Yeah,
I agree. But I always preach to people, when MP3 came into existence, it was a beautiful thing, and to me it was a dangerous thing at the same time. Because when I look at these days, because they were still sending out vinyl, you got a chance to appreciate the tracks a little longer. Because for example, like, how, you know, guys who did radio would get music shipped to them. The record labels had a budget that they had to keep. So if you got, like, let's say this Tribe album, and you got a single, you knew you weren't getting anything else for a little while, because they have a budget. So they want you to work this single. They want you to work this album. Then another single will drop. You know, when the MP3 world came into existence, music is coming out so fast now, because there's not really an overhead to get your music out to DJs. It's just, you know, like make an address book and hit send.
So on
the bad side of that is there's so much music coming out now that you're not going to enjoy the music like you did back in 92 93, because there's too much things, like, oversaturated the market.
So when I look
back at these days, like, with these three albums, these were the days when I got a chance to sit on a record. Do you understand what I mean? Like, and feel it. Like, you know, I would sit in my basement and play each song and play it again and play it. And 2 weeks later, a song that I thought was just okay because I played it so much, now I got it. And I'm like, you know, I get this track. Yo, this track is sick. You know, but nowadays, if I get a song, by tomorrow, 2 days later, there's another 50 tracks in my mailbox.
Yeah.
I don't have time to sit on a track. So I don't know if we'll ever come back to that, to the days where you could really absorb the music, like back in the early 90s and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
To just on your point, it's like the MP3 lifestyle and, you know, like, and now the streaming lifestyle, like, it brought you convenience, but it took away the soul.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and exactly. I mean, I wasn't buying records, but like, even as a consumer, like you know, and it's such a something that you were saying before, Dennis, too, about like nobody putting out like classic albums anymore. I believe you can still put out a classic album. It's just not appreciated the same. And the reason why mm-hmm. I say that is because there's a difference when you go to the store and you buy, you know, you take your $20 and you buy that album, you buy that CD, or you buy that, the tape at the time. And, mm-hmm. you know, you're running it back and forth, and you're holding it in your hand. You're reading the liner notes. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you're really taking everything in. But yeah. Like an album now, like if this album, like say like Wu-Tang was to drop now, you'd be like, oh man, this album is sick. And then you would just, you know, like you would just, it would just be on your playlist.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, understandable.
You know, so it's like, it's just a different, like, I just think it's different. So for me, so because of that, like music right now is so disposable at this moment. And I don't mean like in a bad way, just because again, you get so much records now, you get so much music yeah. now, and it's so easy to get. It's just, you don't appreciate it the same way. You just don't.
No. It's hard. Yeah, I can understandably the larger masses and volumes, because in every city you may have like 100,000 rappers putting something online, and they have 10 tracks each. You can do the numbers after you go through every city in the world, sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's just so much music to appreciate. Yeah. And holding the record makes a difference. It's tangible. You could hold it. You could look at the pictures. You can remember. You can reflect the way they dress and whatnot. When you're listening to the track, you don't have that same advantage. When you're downloading a bunch of stuff, you lose the appreciation of it. So mm-hmm. I understand that perfectly. How do we get around that? Probably there's nothing we could do. One of my wishes is some of those rappers would come back and make albums, and put, because albums is now relevant, apparently, and coming back into circulation, and hopefully that they will put some type of record together, put an album out, and, you know, start that the culture of hip hop back, versus, you know, the social media era where you could just put a track up and extract it down and that's it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, and I'm like you. I don't think that there's any turning back now.
Yeah,
we could even go as far as also to talk about like studio work.
Mm-hmm.
Like you go back in the days, you go to a studio, you're gonna put try to produce a certain amount of tracks, and mm-hmm. and you have to walk in that studio with a budget. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I know so many people with a studio in their house.
Yeah.
So you could pump out so much music that's in your head. Whereas back then, listen, I don't have the pockets to pump out all that music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I might go in the studio and drop one or two singles and hope, you know, people are feeling it so that I could now try to start working on an album.
Yeah, there's no experimenting. You're really working for that track. Yeah.
Exactly. But now, I mean, you know, I go to John Smith's house down like three doors down from me, and we can knock out an album, you know what I mean?
True, and I think at the same time too, I think it's convenience, right? Because everybody's got a studio in their house, or everybody's got a smartphone or a tablet or what have you. Now I can hit up Dennis and be like, "Yo, Dennis, I need you to hop on my track," and you're like, "Okay, cool. I'm gonna send you the beat. I email you the beat. You listen to it. You're like, oh, that's fire. Boom. I'm gonna start writing to this. You start writing. Okay, I'm gonna spit my 16 on that. You spit your 16 bars. You email it back to me. I fixed it. I mastered up. Now it's done. And that's cool, but I think there's an importance of doing things face-to-face, which guys still uh-huh. do, but like back then you didn't have a choice. You know what I mean? Like if I wanted to get Dennis on the song, I had to get Dennis to the studio. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whether he mm-hmm. had his own car or I send somebody to go pick him up, you know, like we had to see each other. We had to work in that same space and vibe off each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like that too also makes a difference. To how like a lot of this stuff sounded back then, you know.
I agree.
The group Foreign Exchange did an album like that. Right. Connected, and Fonte was in North Carolina, I believe, and Nicolay was in the Netherlands, and Fonte went in line, found his beats, and said, "Hey, can we do?" And they did that whole album like that. But the difference is they made a connection. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They were talking. It was organic. They vibed off each other. They had a connection, and they put the album together over a long period of time. Versus, okay, let's get this track out. It's because it's an inauthentic, like, it's not authentic when they do it nowadays, where they just throw a beat, like, just like you said, they send it here, let's do it, boom, put it together, right, can we get it out? They get it out onto the next, somebody or next track, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Not making that connector.
Yeah, I agree. I love, like, these days, though, like, even to this day, there's certain records, like I always said, I'll never get rid of, like, certain hip-hop, certain R&B, that'll always be on my shelves. And every now and then when I pull out, like, the Midnight Marauder, you know, I'm reading some of the stuff off it, and you can visualize it. It almost makes you feel like you're actually in the studio with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can visualize them putting this together. You could visualize, I can visualize Wu-Tang, like, the whole crew putting this together and just brainstorming what will go here, what's good for here. You know what I mean? Change up just a little. So when you could actually feel it, you could almost smell what the studio, you know, smelled like. You know what I mean? It takes you in. But like I said, man, I'll never forget these days. I cherish these days, and these three albums is one of the reasons why I'll always cherish these days.
Yeah, hip hop was good then. The music was good in general then. You know what I mean?
Like, oh my gosh! Yeah.
On the R&B genre, I think we have a lot of splices, like different genres of music now, because there's so much different, diverse music. Mm-hmm. But we had like a genre of hip hop back then. It was pure. And whether you weren't a good hip hop artist or you were, you still have your own identity, and you could see the authenticity of it and the passion towards it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I absorbed back then with hip hop. You know what I mean? And the culture around it. Because it overlapped with basketball and just our way of life. And it was just beautiful back then. It was just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I love it, man. I miss those days. And track, there was so much music that was coming out like every week, and it was so tight. Like, there was so much music. You'd be in the store like every Thursday and Friday and just going through music. And it's like, to me, it was a great time to be a DJ. It was a great time to be a DJ, man. You know, I felt blessed. Like, that's one thing about being, like, back in those days. To me, I was blessed, man.
Because you were able to present the music differently. So the music that you have now, you can't present it the same way you could have did it back then.
The best way to put it is I was able to feel it. You know what I mean? So I was able to actually feel a track. And then when I put it out on the crowd, it's like I knew, okay, they're gonna feel this track or they're not going to feel this track. But sometimes now when you're putting out tracks, you feel like, are they really going to pay attention to this? Because there's so much music in their head, you know, that you got to play the track so fast nowadays because everybody's on that fast pace. So it's a whole different energy now when you're throwing certain tracks out.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's funny because I think, and this is what I was saying before, like, I think that this 2-week period of hip hop was like a reflection of the best period of hip hop. And I'll always believe that 93-94 was the best time in hip hop. So I'm just going to go over a list right here preparing for this podcast. Like, there was a new wave of artists that were coming out during that time, and they're either putting out impactful music, and you had ones that were also entering their prime. And everybody was putting out like pretty much their best work. And I think some of it is like just to steal the concept from sports, you got competitive. When you're, you know, like your tribe and, you know, and you see such and such put out an album, you're like, okay, we gotta go hard. You know, or like if you're Pete Rock, you know, Gangstar just dropped some bangers, you're like, okay, I gotta go back in the studio and mix this up. Like, if you ever hear the story of Illmatic, like how Illmatic was put together, it was five producers and all of them who were basically in their prime throwing their best work. So like, they would sit in each other's sessions and be like, oh my God, he made The World Is Yours. Oh, I gotta go back and fix this. You know, like, so you know, there's a healthy competition there, which is great for us. You know, we benefit from that. Right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so let me go over this list during this period of 93, 94. This is in no particular order. You had Black Moon, who dropped KRS-One, Return of the Boom Bap.
My guy.
Illmatic. You had Nas, Illmatic. You had Biggie, who dropped his first album, Ready to Die. Outkast debuted during this 2-year period. Gangstar dropped Hard to Earn, which is, I think, is their greatest album that
they put out. Oh, my God. Classic, classic.
Scarface was putting out bangers during that period in time. J. Rue the Damager debuted with
J. Rue,
The Sun Rises in the East.
Yeah,
Craig Mack had his first album dropped as well. You also had the Brat, you know, with the Funkified album that was like killing it during that period in time.
Yeah.
Keith Murray, the most beautifulest thing in the world. That album dropped.
Underrated rapper, man.
Oh yeah, yeah, 100%. Here's another big group that they don't get talked about enough. Black Sunday album.
Cypress Hill.
Cypress Hill.
Yeah.
Cypress Hill. Oh my God. That's my guy, man.
Gonna kill it, man. Their first album was like off the charts.
And I thought
they were from New York the whole time. I was like, oh, these guys are killing it. To find out from the West Coast, boy, was I mistaken. The whole album, like top to bottom, was good.
That album was a classic. Black Sunday is a classic.
Yeah, from top to bottom, the whole album was like so good. And they did the remix of A Tribe Called Quest on. They took a beat from it and sort of twisted it. It was like amazing. Like I just
classic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Dennis, Calvin can tell you, man. I used to destroy that Cypress Hill there.
Oh really? Oh my god!
I was a Cypress Hill guy. Listen, to this day, one of the best concerts I've ever been to in my life. Yo, I went to a Cypress Hill concert at Canada Wonderland.
Oh, for real?
Back in the days at Canada Wonderland, and the whole concert was slam dancing.
Really?
Slam dancing. And these dudes were testing weed from the crowd. Who had the best weed?
Shit.
So people were rolling weed and passing it to them, and they had a big bud on the stage that was like, it looked like 10 stories high and a mile wide. Yo, it was sick. That was the sickest concert. And then I was blessed to run into him. Be Real?
Yeah.
Oh my God, about a year later. And I told him about that show. And we were cracking up. I was like, yo, you got to do a drop for me. I had my recorder. He did a drop for me. And I was like, yo, that show was sick. That was one of the sickest hip hop shows I've ever been to in my life.
And he has a unique voice. And they got into rock and roll after too, just like the Beastie Boys. You know what I mean? They were able to cross over like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I respect that group. Yeah.
To this day, they can still do festivals, do, you know, 100,000 people. Like, they still,
for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. Especially overseas, they have just a big following. You know what I mean? Because of hip hop and the crossover as well. And that's a prime example of just staying true to yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Dude,
staying true to yourself, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And a lot of gentlemen will prevail, you know what I mean? People will see the passion rather than being inauthentic, you know what I mean?
Yeah, insane to the brain.
Jeez. Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Jeez.
And the video was so good, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
You knew, Dennis, if you sat in a studio session with them and you never touch a weed, you're coming out of there stoned out of your head.
Really?
That studio must have been like you were in the clouds.
It's true, like a hot pocket. They remind me of Funk Dubious. I don't know if you know about Funk Dubious.
Oh, yeah. What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That's what? When the Funk Dubious came out. Bye, wow, wow. I was like, yo, mini Cypress Hill. Yeah, man.
What?
Hold on. Let me interrupt for a second because I'm still not done with this list. Because we could have stopped there and that 2 year period would be great, but hold on, let me try to wrap this up. So we still got Heavy D. You know, he put out the Nothing But Love for You. That album, that was pretty good. That was nice. Underground Kings, UGK, sorry, UGK.
Yeah.
Underground Kings, they debuted. Onyx dropped around that time.
Mm-hmm.
You had Souls of Mischief, which is I swear to God, if I didn't know any better, I would think they were from Toronto. They get so much love here, I swear.
Yeah, definitely. They toured in Ottawa too back then, too. Yeah.
Oh, 1,000%. Diggable Planets, you know, dropped around that time.
Yeah.
Nice.
Another group that gets, like, they get underrated. They get that underrated tag with them. But they had a period where they were on fire at one point. Lords of the Underground.
Oh, yeah. Funky Child.
Yep. You had the Beat Nuts that were dropping around that time. The Alcoholics that was dropping around that time.
Yeah.
Master Ace put out a classic.
I mean, that's crazy. Listen to this list.
Naughty by Nature put out the Hip Hop Parade, 1993, whatever, the 1990 album. Queen Latifah dropped her album. She came back.
Wow.
You had Run DMC, Down with the King. And we're not even counting like House of Pain. We're not even counting like all that other stuff. Like, and when you look at this list, it's so diverse. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like, just looking at this, like, it's insane. Then, like, I didn't even mention like Redman. I didn't even mention guys like that who are putting out albums too. Like,
And these guys aren't one-hit wonders either.
No.
So they're constantly putting out good product in their own lane. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right, right. And like that's what I mean. Like everybody is so – it's such a diverse list. And everybody's sounding different. That's the thing. Like today it's like I don't want to say everybody sounds the same because you still have some unique sounding guys. But like it sounds very similar, like hip-hop and R&B as a whole. Whereas you look at this list – like, who the hell sounded like B-Real? Nobody sounded like B-Real. You know what I mean? Then you had somebody like Biggie who dropped. And, like, you know, like, who sounded like Biggie?
Who sounded like Meth, yeah?
Yeah, who sounded like Snoop?
Even when it came to production, when it came to style of dress, their swag, their album covers and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Music nowadays, we're talking about hip-hop. If the lyrics or the BPMs aren't the same, the beat is the same, or the BPMs of the beat is the same. So there's always something similar to the point where every third song you can't differentiate who's who. So what I don't like about Eminem's album now, lyrically it's tight, but it sounds too similar to what's out there right now versus what he sounded in his past album. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So he's just been absorbed to that sound. Back then, no one was absorbed to any sound. You've stayed in your own lane, and you continue in your own lane in terms of album after album, production after production.
Yeah, and that's why I think, like, we were spoiled. Like, we took it for granted, you know? And it, like, especially
back then,
just like, oh, my God. Like, you didn't even realize what was going on back then. Like, it's – I used to tell – I remember having this conversation with one of my nephews, and I remember telling him, like, if an album wasn't, like, 75% hot, you didn't pick it up. You know what I mean? Like if it had like more than like three or four fillers, you're like, this album's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, but I'm 88.1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, I'll take a couple singles off this. I'll record those and that. I'm done with this. That list, like just going back and looking at this list, I was actually blown away by it because I'm like, yo, this is unbelievable. And like I said, I'm leaving some people out.
That's crazy.
I'm leaving some people out.
That's not even R&B. You know what I mean?
And again, I'm not even including the three albums we're talking about on top of that, you know?
And you're not even including the remixes of some of the singles on these albums.
Or collabos. You know what I'm saying?
Or like
soundtracks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, those are good days, man. Those are good days.
So you know what? I'm going to ask a couple of, we'll continue this conversation, but just... I'm going to ask a couple of hard questions here about these three specific albums.
Go ahead.
All right. So you have to choose Midnight Marauders or Low End Theory?
Midnight Marauders or Low End Theory?
Yeah.
Midnight Marauders.
If you have to choose, like, which one do you think is better?
You know, I'll be honest with you, because I don't have the other one in my head right now. I would probably more gravitate to Midnight Marauder, but if I had both of them sitting in front of me, that would be a hard question to answer.
I'll pull it up all right now. Continue. I'll pull it up right now.
Yeah, I know, in theory. Oh, and Midnight. That's tough, man.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Which is to show you the greatness, right?
Yeah. I would have to say, because Electric Relaxation is probably one of my top two songs of Tranquil Quest, so...
Yeah. I mean, hold on a second. Let me pull it up, because I want you to.
Can I kick it?
Yeah. Yes, you can, man. That's tough.
And you got the jazz and.
Yeah. So you had Excursions bugging out.
Yeah, bugging out.
Butter vibes and stuff. Check the Rhyme Scenario. Who Got the Jazz? Sky Pager.
Yeah, I'm like.
I might have to go with Low End. Now that I think about it, yeah, man, yeah. I might have to go that route. Because I mean, I like Calvin.
There's too many classics on that, you know.
Yeah,
and that's their album. That's their second album,
right?
Anticipated because people in New York thought they were just a flop. They weren't getting love in New York, so they really put into this album, and this is their second album. And I remember listening to Bugging Out. 88.1, he said, okay, debut album, fuck it. And then I was like, yo, this song's like off the chain. And then heard the album, you know. So I think that's why I would pick that album, because it's more in terms of their career.
And I remember when Who Got the Jazz came out, I think I had an out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know how they did that. I was like, that's such a jazzy beat. Like, yeah.
Something happened to me. I think I drifted off somewhere. I used to play, I'm pretty sure if you play that album right now, it probably has some, you know, the popcorn effect at the beginning of the song. Because I used to just cut that song out back and forth. I couldn't stop cutting it back and forth. That track was just sick. So when I think back of it, that album, it hit me harder than this one.
It's tough. It's honestly, I don't argue with anybody's list when it comes to that. Like everybody has their preference between the two. Mine, I think, was Midnight Marauders resonated with me a little more. But I don't argue with anybody's list when it comes to that one, because it's, you know, they're both classic. And that's the thing. Like, you can't. Well, a couple of things. I think you got to give props to that group, because it's hard enough to put out one classic. But to put out two where, like, they stand the test of time, you know, like 25, 30 years later, you're still looking to play them, like play those albums like they just came out yesterday. Like, that to me is just the sign, you know, the sign of a genius, you know, of genius work. Hold on. Let me because Midnight Marauders, I mean, you go over the list again, the War Tour. You know, still, you know, like you said, Steve Biko, Sucka Nigga, which I love that record.
You know what?
Electric Relaxation, Oh My God. You know which record is an underrated record for me on that album that I love too? Is The Chase.
The Chase, yeah.
I used to love The Chase too. But, sorry, were you going to say, Chris? You're going to say something?
Back in those days, a lot of the clubs we would do, you couldn't play certain joints.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have to leave certain joints for radio. But I remember in Toronto, certain joints just didn't take off, and it used to piss me off, because one of the tracks that I felt that used to just move me, and I used to try to drop it sometimes in parties, but I'd never get a nice reaction. So I'd have to kind of watch it and mix it out quick at certain points, was Midnight.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Midnight that was song, unbelievable.
Yeah, that song to me, but every time I tried it at a party, it didn't get what I thought it should get. You know what I mean?
Okay. So you would just slowly mix it out quickly, or you let it play out?
No, I would always, like, certain tracks, if I wasn't sure about it, I would make sure, and I'd have another vinyl lined up. So I would tuck like another track under the next turntable. So that just in case this one doesn't get the action, I pull that track out quick and just bring it in quick. But so certain tracks to me, I always felt like the city, at least that R&B market that I used to play to a lot, a War Tour worked, you know, certain tracks worked, but there were so many tracks, especially with hip hop, that I just thought should have tore the roof off, you know. But it was sometimes in Toronto, people were too cool in these R&B parties to go off. It pissed me off, man.
Play the remix.
You know? It could piss me off, because as much as an R&B DJ that I was just as much a hip-hop DJ. But I used to have to hold back. So when I do R&B parties, I would have to hold back my hip-hop side, because you don't want to clear the floor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. but you're right. Looking back on those two albums, in terms of that aspect, that, you know, the club aspect point of view, Low End Theory had more of the club bangers.
Yeah, I would agree.
Both incredible in its own way. But and you know what, though? I think you got to give props to Q-Tip. And the reason why I say that is because I think personally, I think he's the most underrated producer in hip-hop.
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. Because people didn't even know he produced until, like, afterwards. Or he did that song, because he didn't really advertise himself as a producer. Like, he was always, to me, just the rapper. You know what I'm saying? I always thought Ali.
That's what I thought, too.
Was the
producer the whole time, you know? And it wasn't. But I've never heard Q-Tip say, I produced that. He just sort of, J. Dilla did this or what. But he never said, oh, I did it.
Yeah.
Plus writing rhymes and, you know, man.
Even when you look at the liner notes and stuff, it always says, you know, especially the earlier albums, it always said produced by A Tribe Called Quest. But you're like, you're thinking because Ali Sheikh Muhammad is a DJ, you're like, it was him that probably did it.
Exactly.
You know, not knowing all that time, it was Q-Tip that was getting these little samples together and chopping it up and,
it's exactly it. You would search, you would do research and cut it up to the point where the producer's like, the day before the album, okay, you have to give it to us now. like, give it to us because we're ready for it. Because he would always manipulate to the last second. He was a perfectionist in that nature. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he would search for those tracks, yeah.
Yeah, like I'll say, producers like him, I always said they're like MacGyver. They always found these little samples, you know. Give me a roll of toilet paper. Give me the paper clip. I'll make a bomb to get us out of here. Like, it's I don't know how he. I honestly don't know how he did it. I don't know.
Pete Rock and Jay Dilla, Ninth Wonder. They're pros at it. You know,
Primo.
Track the music. I'm like, I don't know how you guys do it. Like, how did you guys hear that? And then they hear something you don't even hear, and they manipulate it. So, damn, that's some hard. Like, that's a nice beat.
Yeah. You know. Well, and also what I love about these guys is I used to always look at the time. Do you know how much time you have to put in to go through a record? So when I thought about those guys, especially back in the days, I used to be like, yo, these guys have to spend so much, log in so much hours. If you're not passionate about it and you're willing to fail doing it, you couldn't be on their level.
Yeah, I remember somebody coming to Pete Rock and saying, hey, where did you find another DJ? He said, no, you need to go find that on your own. You know what I'm saying? The same way I had to search for it. And that's exactly what he said. You know, make
you appreciate it. You appreciate it more. Yeah.
He said he had to hunt for those. You know?
And that's why to this day, Dennis, anytime DJs approach me and they're like, yo, I want to come to your house and trade music, like trade files. I'm like, nah, man. Especially if you're just getting into the game, no. You got to do the red eye. I call it the red eye. And that's where you got to stay up so much hours that your eyes are constantly bloodshot. Mm-hmm. And that's how you're going to enjoy this shit. If you're just taking stuff from people, you'll never enjoy it. You got to put in the hours. You got to put in the hours. If you don't put in the hours, you don't deserve to be in this game, or you can't call yourself a true DJ.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I think back of the Primos and those guys, it's like, I know they logged in hours that are like phenomenal. Not every human being is built to do.
Yeah, it's true. They really put it, and the research in all genres of music back then, like blues, rock and roll, you know, jazz, like whatever.
If you ever get a chance, and for you listeners too, if you ever get a chance, I don't know if you're popular with, if you're familiar with this, but like, if you go on YouTube, check out Vin Reekin. Because he always, he's that DJ from, I think, Power 106 in Los Angeles. He always takes, like, a classic album and plays you all the samples from the album. But he does it, like, track for track for every song. So, like, a Midnight Marauders. Like, the Midnight Marauders one, you should check that out. That one is sick. Just where you see, like, the samples. And some of them, literally, Dennis, they're like 2 seconds. They're like a second. Yeah. And you're like, yo, that's
and
what you mean.
Flipping it.
Yeah, you're like, what the hell? You're like, what the hell? Between, like, you know, doing research later on as time went along, and then you got a chance to watch that documentary on Tribe, like, for me, I think I appreciated Q-Tip really like the most out of that documentary, especially going back to it, because, and, you know, you think about it,
like, you did a lot of work.
Yeah, like it's like after Midnight Marauders came, like, he helped kind of like usher in that renaissance of the East Coast. Like, he helped kind of change that sound a bit. And I mean, look, for example, like, he was on Nas for One Love, like, for Illmatic for One Love. You know, he did 3 tracks off the infamous Drink Away the Pain. He did Temperatures Rising and Give Up the Goods. And then, you know, all of them sound different. That. They're all sick. Yeah, and then he did the first Crooklyn Dodgers record.
Which is a classic to me.
Which is a classic, yeah. Like, it's, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's only at that point you're like, Q-Tip is disgusting.
Yeah.
But it's like when you talk about the greatest producers of all time, he never gets mentioned. But like, but how is that so when Tribe Called Quest is one of the greatest hip hop groups of all time?
Yeah. He did a remix for Nas too.
He did flaunt.
No, say what you just said. He didn't flaunt it.
Yeah, because he didn't.
Yes,
flaunt it,
yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, he did it. That's what I was saying. He did a The World Is Yours remix, and I was like,
oh my god. Ooh.
Hell made this beat. You know what I'm saying? I was like, what was going on in his head? You know?
Yo, I forgot about that.
Yeah. I'm like, it sounded better than the first track. Mm-hmm. I was like, how could that be?
You know what I'm saying? I forgot about that.
And he never said anything to nobody. He never said, he just didn't flaunt it, like you were saying. He didn't show off. He didn't say, I'm a producer. Give me my right. He really enjoyed the music. He was so good at it. You know?
Yeah. Sometimes I miss those days where you get a record and you put the needle on it. You come home or you open it or whatever, like out of the mailbox. You put your needle on it and you do the good God. I miss those good God moments. I don't really get those moments too much anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And those days, like I remember, for example, when Pete Rock remixed the House of Pain, Jump Around.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I remember putting the needle on that record and going, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, like I miss those moments. Like it shook your whole, you know, world. You know what I mean?
And he did it with Dos Effects too, you know?
Yeah.
And the same thing. He has an album, an instrumental album, Peace Instrumental, maybe like five, six years ago. But it's so amazing. He's just so crafty with this. And it's so surprising because he reminds me like a Jay Dilla where he produces, but he raps too. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. Very good. Like Q-Tip produces and he raps too.
Yeah.
Very well. You know,
it was another underrated remix that, as you know, if we're going to go into this remix conversation right now, Craig Mack, Can I Get Down? The remix.
Yes, yes, yes.
That remix was stupid.
Yes.
Stupid.
It was. Who produced that?
Q-Tip.
He did? Oh, my God. I didn't know that, man. Yeah. That was a good remix. Yeah. Can I get that? Yeah.
That was a nice remix.
Yeah, man.
That remix was stupid, man. Like, and then years later, I found that he did. Remember, I mean, he was a one-hit wonder, but you remember Apache?
Apache did.
The gangster. What's it called? Gangster.
Yeah.
He did that too.
I need a gangster.
Yeah.
I need a gangster. Yeah.
Yeah, he did that too.
Who, Q-Tip?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know how good you have to be for all these artists to have to come to you and say, hey, do a beat for me?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Jeez, man.
Wow.
Yeah. Here's another question I want to ask now. Can you make the argument that Doggy Style is better than The Chronic?
It's tough. I would say The Chronic is better.
Right, but I'm saying, can you make the argument though? I know many people say The Chronic is better. They think it's The Chronic. Some people think Chronic is the best album of all time, which I kind of disagree with. I love it, but
not all time. But I think The Chronic had like 20 tracks on it, something like that, or a ridiculous amount. And I think it's like saying, was Jordan better this year or the year after? What, each year he got better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm, so the first album was okay, you know, good, but the next album is better because he's more seasoned. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, right.
And so he knows what it is. Because you remember, he was coming from the street. He just gave him the tape. He had no experience or nothing. Then he went from 0 to 100, and he really put it. But now he has all the studio. Now he has the fame and the fortune, the confidence, the people around him. His direction, he knows what he wants, what he doesn't want. So I think that's why I would say the other album would be much better, but there's no real argument with that because you could tell that he's a much better writer, rhymer, you know what I mean? Better beats were given to him, you know what I mean?
Right. What are your thoughts, Chris?
So, you know, a lot of these questions you're asking, it's tough to answer.
Yeah, man.
It's one of those things where I wish I knew the answer so I can pull out the albums and actually look at them. You know what I mean? So I can get a feel for them again.
Yeah.
You know, because it's good questions, though, because it leaves you, like stumped.
Yeah, man. So I'm still thinking, like, but yeah, man. But that's, if I had to go one way, you know, that's where it would be for those reasons. But I'm really talking myself through it like I'm on the phone by myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, is it really? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, Dennis. Like, you know
what I'm saying? which again shows you how good the product was.
Yeah, you know.
But you know what, Dennis? You make a great point though, because I think you can. There's an argument that could be made that Doggy Style is better, but honestly, you stole the reason what I was gonna say, and it's. What Dr. Dre and them did was, you know, for The Chronic was timeless, right? Because I was kind of like you. I wasn't really into the West Coast hip-hop until The Chronic. Like, I wasn't an N.W.A. fan either. I liked Ice Cube, though. I liked Ice Cube when he came out. Like when he went solo, I liked Ice Cube.
When he went solo, yes, I did.
But outside of Ice Cube, I wasn't really feeling a lot of West Coast stuff at the time until the Chronic. Until the Chronic came out, I was like, okay. Like that Chronic got my attention as to be like, all right, you know what? This is. And then Snoop was just so unique sounding and different. Like, how do you not like his sounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think,
if you say you didn't like him, you're behaving,
it's like he mastered the sound. And then he went another level with talking about Dr. Dre with Doggy Style. He was at the point where you're just batting 1,000 right now. Like you got to the top of the mountain. Now you're just dusting everybody off. Like, you know, like that's the way I kind of see it. And it's the same way I kind of see it with like Low End Theory to Midnight Marauders. Like as much there's probably more bangers, more hits on Low End Theory, but like I just think. Top to bottom, I think Midnight Marauders, like there's no holes. Like Doggy Style, there's no fillers in Doggy Style. You know what I mean? Like like even some of the fillers could have been singles if you really wanted to push it.
Yeah.
You know, like Doggy Dog World, like I think that song was like that was one of my favorite songs.
Yeah. And nice, eh?
Yep, and the Shiznit and Pump, like
yeah,
classic stuff. But yeah. Like when I always make that argument or bring that up with people, and people go crazy, like, no, you can't. That's blasphemous to talk about in comparison to the Chronic. But I'm always like, but if you listen to the two of them, you know, I'm obviously not gonna do it right now. But like, if you ever get a chance, listen back to the two of them. Man, the Doggy Style is right up there with the Chronic, man. Like, just,
yeah, I know.
Just
it is,
sonically,
it is.
It's an incredible piece of work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but my reason again too is to say if that album is better, that means he didn't grow. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
as an artist.
No, it's a great mm-hmm. point.
So if I had to pick, I'm only basing it on that because they're both so good. You know what I'm saying?
But then that's a tricky one because then we can go back and say the same thing about Tribesman.
I think their albums were getting better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they were getting more crafty. I think they were sampling different things. I think they were taking. They weren't even taking risks. They were established, so they were able to do a lot more things without the fear of taking risks. You know what I'm saying? No, so,
but if you compare the Low End to the Midnight Marauder,
mm-hmm.
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I might still go with the Low End.
Because they mastered it with the Low End. They mastered it with the Low End, but they kind of perfected it with Midnight Marauders. But like, you have to recognize that you got to the top of the top of the hill with Low End Theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's what I say with Death Row and Doggies, like the Chronic. Like I think when it comes to Dr. Dre, I think he got to the top of the mountain with the Chronic, and then just Doggy Style was just the next evolution of it.
Yeah,
remember Murder Was the Case.
Yeah. And he made it sound so cool. It was a story like a slick mix style, but gangster like, you know what I'm saying? And it made it seem like he was talking directly to them. Like, it was just like, it was real. And the video always matched what he was feeling and saying, too. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really, really good. Yeah, nice song, good beat. You know what I mean?
That's how I feel about Pump, because I'm like Pump. I'm like as a grown man now, I'm always like, I shouldn't. You know, you feel weird singing it, but like it just.
Yeah,
like,
I know. Man, I'm
like, that's like one of my favorite records, man. I love that record. Man. It's my guilty pleasure. I love that record. I need to hear it loud at all times.
Yeah. Like, well, that's why it's a shame a lot of those albums. They didn't have the clean versions. They had the clean versions on a lot of the singles, but not the album. So you couldn't even play the albums at home sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you have to put on your headphones.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, here's my other question. Let me lead you to this last question, and then we'll wrap it up. What's your favorite song off 36 Chambers?
Protect Your Neck. Yeah.
Protect Your Neck?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just because why? Like, just because...
Oh my gosh! Lyrically, he's talking about Joe Frazier and Hellraiser. It was like he came right in, and it was just raw, and it was more like a New York kind of style for me, even though it was a different kind of New York.
Mm.
And it just caught me off guard because, like Chris was saying, that there was a lot of guys I didn't know who was a rapper, who was a DJ, who was like, you know, the sidekick. They incorporated like kung fu, so I thought it was like okay. And then when I heard, like, I heard a couple of tracks before, I was like, who, and I put it together from Protect Your Neck, you know what I mean? Wu-Tang Clan. And that was, like, I think my first introduction of their lyrical tightness. You know what I'm saying? It's just the beat was good. Like, everything about that song was nice. Lyrically tight, Meth came in, yeah.
It's the it's the Method Man for short moving.
And you see how the beat just comes in, it pauses there, and then it comes. That song was like, it was an ill song, man. Ill song.
Because looking back, like when I first heard Protect Your Neck, I pretty much think I had the same answer as everybody else, or the same response, I should say, which is basically like what the hell is this?
I didn't understand. It was just a good song, man. Like everything about it. Like warmer for basketball in the house, showered, like all that. Yeah.
I have to agree, but I'm coming from another angle. Mine is also like Dennis's Protect Your Neck, but here's why. Because I grew up like playing everything as a DJ, but I was also a good portion of me was a hip hop DJ, and I always believed there's a certain time at a party, whether it's an R&B party or whatever, where I'm going to hit them hard in the chest. Hard in the chest. And we're going to bang this out. And when I'm done for that, like, 45 minutes, hour, you're going to be like, what just happened? Your shirt's drenched and the place just wild out. And Protect Your Neck fit perfect in that energy where it's just hard. You know what I mean? Hard, like thumping in your chest. It's craziness. It's aggressive. Like, I love that kind of hip-hop. So when I heard Protect Your Neck, it had me written all over it. It was just hype. So I just visioned at 1 o'clock at a party, we're going to go hard for about an hour. Until, Dennis, you remember this? Until last call, close to last call at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
So usually like around 1 o'clock, something to one, you're going to go hard. And things like Protect Your Neck, you slide in a mix with tracks that are on that energy. And people are just going to go ape shit for the next 45 minutes.
If you play this song right now in your circuit, you know what I mean? And if you're playing out, people our age group are going to go lose their head. You know what I mean? They're like, what? Like, girls, guys, people know the song. They remember it.
It depends. Very influential song. It depends on the party. There's some parties. I mean, Dennis, Toronto's a tricky place because there's parties where I've cleared the floor or came close to clearing the floor, I remember. And I'm talking like 10, 15 whatever years ago. The stuff like, let's say like Stucker MCs, you know, certain tracks that I'm like, are you guys kidding me? Like, I know you guys grew up on this shit, but it depends on the crowd. Like age group now, it depends. Because there's still some people, they feel like, okay, because I'm 35 now and up, I shouldn't be listening or dancing to, you know, Protect Your Neck anymore. That's kind of beneath me now.
Oh, okay. I look at it the opposite. I look at it as like the complete opposite. When I do go out, which is very rarely, but when I do, I see people my age group and older, and I'm 45, dancing to the new music, whoever they are right now, you know, whoever's relevant in the last couple of weeks, and they're dancing to it, and they're really having a good time. And I just look at it; they've lost the value of dancing to music that moves your soul. You know what I mean? Rather than just your head. Or your neck and up. You know what I'm saying? So
I agree. And that's why when you go to some of these concerts, like some years back, we went to see Rakim, right? And even before that, we went to see Calvin. You remember this? We went to see Tribe. I remember being at that party and or that concert, and the place was packed. It was at the Cool House, and the place was packed. Why is it that the majority of the people in there was 20-year-old white kids?
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys I grew up with was Tribe Head, was Rakim, Eric B and Rakim Head, but they would never go to a show if they came to town right now.
I went to De La Soul, same thing, Cool House, when De La Soul came. I figured it all, it's going to be Ram with people my age that are black or urban and not one.
Yeah, maybe that's some weird
sprinkled here and there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we get to like 35 and we feel like, you know, it's beneath us now. We have to mature and outgrow that. I'm like, F that, man. You know, I'm hip hop till I die, man.
Yeah, man. Likewise. I don't know. I can't, if I go to a party and I go to dance and I want a reflection of myself and, memories. And I love when people are singing the same music that I'm singing. And I know everywhere is not going to play that type of music. It's more of like a theme night, 80s theme, 90s theme. For me, there's just not a lot of options for me to go out to want to dance and listen to. I wouldn't say good music. Music that I particularly like because it's infused with a lot of the trap music nowadays and whatnot that I have no relationship with. I have no idea what they're saying. and I don't know how to dance to it. And the new dance is like 3 seconds dance to the next 3 seconds dance to the next 3 seconds dance. And that's very difficult for me. So that would be my only complaint, would to have more Chris Nices around the city. To have more, you know what I'm saying? 80s and 90s, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, at the right parties where we're appreciated.
Yes.
But we're appreciated, because I've been at parties where certain friends of mine will drop certain tracks and I'm in a corner, like certain old school hip hop, and I'm like, oh my God. And I'm hearing women going, why are you playing this shit? And they're my age. And I'm thinking, oh, come on.
Oh, my
you
God.
You didn't dance to this shit?
You know what? Like, I want to say something about that Tribe concert. I was at that concert. Let me tell you something right now. I never smiled more at a concert in my life than that Tribe concert, man. And you know why? Because that was at the time when Tribe was broken up, right? And they came back for just like a 5-city tour. And I think at the very, Chris, I don't know if you remember this, Dennis, basically Chris called me at about a half hour before the show started. And I was on my way somewhere and he called me like, yo, I got an extra ticket basically. And I remember I was like, I went from Malvern to like in front of the Cool House, like standing in front of the Cool House, like in 20 minutes. Like, that's how fast I got there. And and as soon as I walked in, like Q-Tip hit the stage, and dude, my face, I never went to a concert where my face hurt. Like, I was smiling so much that, like, my face was sore. Yeah. My cheeks were sore.
It's like when you chew gum for so long, it gets sore.
Oh, my gosh. Yo, I was blacking out, man. And they started hitting, you know, like, they started going through their catalog. It was just...
Dennis, it was bangers after bangers after bangers. It was retarded, man. But I always said, what I always took from that show is, where are my friends? Where are my people? You know, why am I looking at a 21-year-old kid in front of me?
Yeah.
You know, like, come on, man. You guys grew up with this shit. We're in the layup lines to this shit. We're in clubs to this shit. What? That to this day, that will always confuse me.
Yeah.
And you know what? I want to revisit something with Protect Your Neck real quick. It's funny because, like, hip-hop was, like, you know, especially back then, like, you were so used to having, like, if there was that many people and one song, it was usually like a collaboration. It was like a symphony, or it was like self-destruction. You know what I mean? Where, like, everybody, you know, like, came on for the one, like, the We Are the World hip hop version of one type of record. So to have like 8 rappers or 9 rappers on one song was like, it was just unheard of. But my favorite one, it's funny we're not mentioning Method Man as like one of the songs, but like... But my favorite one was, it's a tie between Can It Be All So Simple and Cream.
Okay. Yeah,
I think Cream was like, I think Cream was one of the best records ever made, man, if you ask me. I'm sorry. Just because when you combine like the hotness of the song, you know, like, you know, the beat was perfect. Ray and Inspector Deck rhyming on it was perfect. It was just a perfect combo. Method Man was on the hook. Like, nobody in that group could pull off that hook like Method Man did. And then you just figure, like, on top of that, you throw in the fact that, like, culturally, like, how that name, Cream, like, that acronym, basically, like, it dominated culture for the next, you know, 20-something years. You know what I mean? Like, people still to this day use Cream. You know what I mean? Like, use Cash Rules, Everything Around Me. Like, people still use those acronyms to this day. So it's like, I think when you look at the combination of all of that, it's that, but then, like, I love Can It Be All So Simple. I just think that song is just flawless.
The intro, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The intro. But you know what's funny? When you're saying Cash Rules Everything Around Me, you're talking, and all I'm hearing is the end when you go, dollar, dollar, bill, yeah. God, I love hip-hop, man. God.
All right, so here's my here's my final question. So
let me cut you, Calvin. You brought back some great memories tonight, man.
Oh, you're welcome. It was needed, man. Like, it's funny, like a couple weeks ago when everybody was talking about the celebration of Midnight Marauders and the 36 Chambers dropping on the same day, I was like, yeah, this is amazing, but I'm like, where was this 5 years ago? Because I was going crazy 5 years ago with this when this topic happened. But like, every once in a while, you got to do a podcast like this, man, where you just kind of, one of the reasons why I love doing podcasts like these, because we should have a venue where, like, or sorry, an avenue where we're able to reminisce. Like, you know, you hear people talk about, oh man, Top Gun was the best movie of all time, and they're talking about, oh my god, like, you know, the Metallica album was one of the greatest albums, Nirvana, yeah. Da, 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 da. What happened to our stuff? Like albums like these, or times like these, where it's like, this is like, for if you're a hip hop head, this is like an important, you look back, this is a very important time, because those three albums were so, they were so impactful, and they sounded so different from one another, and they, each of them, like, they did, it kind of reverberated for generations, changed the game. It helped change the game, you know what I mean? So it's like you have to celebrate like that time period, you know, yeah. What I mean? Because it was a special time period,
and it was a part of our culture. It was a part of us. It was a part of our, you know, our, when we were growing up. It means a lot. Like, these memories mean a lot. Because right now, as I'm talking to you, I'm in the basement looking at the records as I'm talking to you. I'm sitting down watching the shelves.
When you guys talk, I'm sometimes daydreaming, like, oh. Remember that? You know, yeah, because it's good to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's only so many people I could talk about, you know, hip-hop with and the art of it, you know what I mean? And have the time to sit down to do it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So now that we're doing it, I'm like, man, that was some good time. Yeah, I didn't know about he produced that. Oh, really? Oh, you feel the same way about I feel? Oh, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so
my good, man.
No doubt. So my last question is, like, what are your lasting thoughts on this period? Like, I know we've basically, you know, spoke about it ad nauseum, but like, what are your lasting thoughts on that 2-week span in '93 when three classic albums, you know, helped change hip hop?
The lasting reflection of that 2-week period is that it's still relevant, and it still brings me a happy face today talking about it, right? And it's been that relevant through my life, listening to the songs over and over, thousands of times, you know, and the memories that my friends have with it at parties. And so it was a major influence, I would say, in my life in terms of music and happiness and how I value music, how I can compare music from then to now. And the appreciation, because people say when you just play music and you listen to it, it's more than listening to it. It's just soothing your soul. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I was so appreciative of that they put out music like that I can listen to, and it makes me feel good. And I work out to it, and I play it when I'm taking a shower. It just really, really, really made a big positive blessing in my life. So there's no other way to put it, because I didn't reap no rewards from it. Other than just the beauty of the music itself.
I totally agree. I would put it this way. Those 2 weeks to me is a reminder of how blessed I was, or am, I should say, to have gone through that period, mm-hmm. where it was vinyl. I got a chance to touch it. I got a chance to breathe it. Like, I'll give you a quick example. A friend of my son's came by one day. They were going to a party, and they were waiting for an Uber or something. So they went downstairs for a bit, and his boy came back freaking out, because while he was downstairs, he decided to go to my shelf. And he was freaking out because he's like, yo, like, this is the actual albums, the actual, you know, singles. Like, yo, your dad lived this, you know? And he was freaking out because like your dad lived this. And it hit me. I was like, yeah, to them, it must be interesting, because they hear about Biggie and here's the actual album. With name on it, and this, you can read it. And I sat back and I thought, yeah, this was a blessing that I will always, always cherish, and always feel like I was a part of something special. I was a DJ in these times when they were pushing these types of records that you could feel, you could touch. It had substance. You know what I mean? We could put a diamond tip needle to it and feel that bass. Like, I love those days. I cherish it. You know what I mean? So those 2 weeks is just a piece of that. It fits perfect in that puzzle that I was blessed to be a part of.
Yeah, and I think in closing, I would just to add to what you guys are saying, like, it just reminds me of how spoiled we were, man. Like, more than anything else, like, it's just, I don't want to romanticize it and be like, okay, well, you know, every single artist I put out an album was a classic. You know, there was some duds, obviously.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? Definitely.
Of course, but like, just going over the list that I read earlier in the pod, to like, just thinking back, like, I think music is such a connecting point. With, you know, like it is a part of your life. even you know my family I got now, you know, with my kids and stuff, it's like I'll pull up like Midnight Marauders, and you know I won't pull up Doggy Style, obviously, but yeah. I'll pull up certain albums and certain songs and stuff, and it's such a connecting point. Like you know my fiance, like she's as big as a Tribehead as I am. This is something like when you want to like uplift the energy and uplift the mood in the house, it's like, all right, let me run some Tribe for a half hour. You know, and everybody, the kids, everybody's is getting happy. It's just such a connecting point. Like, you know, we're having this conversation, but like, you remember where you were when, you know, it was just our time, right? You remember where you were when certain songs dropped. And I always tell the story about like when Cuban Links dropped, right? The Raekwon's first album, The Purple Tape. And I remember like to this day, our whole crew, like all 10, 12, 15 of us, all went downtown, and we're still living in Montreal at the time, and we all went downtown to all get a copy of this album. It was like a movement, you know what I mean? Like when certain albums dropped, it was just a movement. You look back on it now, and it's just you just digest music differently now, you know what I mean? But like, and some of it is cool, and like the being able to get it like quick, fast, and in your hands right away. It's that part is amazing, but you do lose that oomph in it, you know what I mean? Because you get it so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So yeah. that's the biggest thing for me. I think it's just, you know, you realize how spoiled you were.
Yeah, fast food versus restaurant food, where it's presented nicely and somebody comes over and presents it to you, and versus fast food, just get it quick and eat it, on to the next one.
Yep, right. Basically. And you just described music, right? Like today's music right there.
Yeah. Although I will say I did enjoy the hip hop for 2018. I did actually enjoy it a lot for like the first time in a while. You know, I'll admit that. But like, but you're right though. Like it's just the way it's presented now, which is different. And then, you know, don't even bring up R&B. Like R&B is just I don't even know if it's called R&B anymore. Like this.
I don't even have a genre for that right now. You know. Yeah.
I call it slow music. slow warm up music. Every R&B I hear now, I'm like, yo, back in the days, we'd use this for warm up.
Yeah.
You know.
This is a different time. You know what I mean? So it's. This is not like a get off your lawn moment, you know, but it's just, you know, it is what it is. Like I love music, man. So it's like you give me a classic song now, like, you know, somebody puts out a classic album now, like I'll appreciate it the same way, but I will, because I know I enjoy music a certain kind of way. So I'll appreciate it in my mind, this, you know, the kind of the same way I always have. But like, I know a lot of people just, they enjoy it differently. You know what I mean? So I think that's just the biggest thing. I think we're just looking at that period, like that peak of the golden era period, we're just spoiled, man. Like it's just like you're never gonna see that again, you know?
Yeah.
You're just not gonna see that again. You know?
Yeah. I agree. I don't think we can go back, you know what I mean? But we got the memories, you know what I mean? Yeah. We got the memories. To this day I always said there's certain tracks that I have shelf that my kids are gonna have to figure out what to do with one day when I'm gone.
Figure out, I'll take them. I'm the one.
You know, like there's certain things you can't sell. Like, you know, there's times where I thought about selling a bunch of records, and I'm like, man, I can't get rid of this. Certain things.
You're gonna feel bad.
Yeah, I can't, because it played a part in your life. You knew where you were when you got that record. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know where you are in your life when you got certain tracks. So it's hard to get rid of them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And on that note, fellas, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for coming on the AV Podcast.
No, thank you, man.
No, thank you for real. Yeah, I appreciate it.
I appreciate that. And yo, let me...
You make me want to go dig in the crates right now.
Well, yeah, man.
We'll dig now. and let me step back for the next couple of minutes. I'll let you guys plug whatever you want to plug, whether it's your show, your next gig, Dennis, like whatever you guys want to plug, go ahead right now.
I have nothing to plug. I'm just living life and just
okay. Chris, you go
what
next.
What you talking about, man? What you talking about? Let him know, man.
You're not gonna do it? Okay, all right.
Just audition. That's it. You know. On to the next thing, on to the next thing, next mini project, mini commercial, mini TV show, that's it. And nothing big coming up, but just very blessed to be in this position. That's it.
Don't worry. The Grammys party's coming soon. The Grammy party's coming soon.
Yep, I got the outfit put away for
it. Yep. I got the tux underneath the mattress. It's ready to go.
and I love it.
and Chris, you want to plug your show before we get out of here?
Yes, I could be heard weekly on the Grooves and Rhythms Mix Show. You can catch it on you can catch it on mylimeradio.com. You could also keep in contact with me at chrisnice.com or on social media, DJ Chris Nice, or Facebook at Chris Nice.
All right. Thanks again, fellas, for coming on the show.
All right. Good night, folks. Thanks.
Good night, folks, and the pleasure was all mine, man. Loved it.
Thank you all for tuning in to the AF Podcast and listening to this episode. A special shout out goes out to DJ Chris Nice and Dennis Barham for hopping on the pod and taking that trip down memory lane regarding the greatest 2 weeks in hip hop history. It was greatly appreciated. Make sure you check out DJ Chris Nice's show on My Line Radio, the Grooves and Rhythms Mix Show, every Friday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. as he continues to give you a wide range of great music every single week. And to continue to support the podcast, South Shore Ave is available wherever you listen to your favorite ones. You can listen to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, as well as Stitcher. And to listen, subscribe, and filter through my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAve.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAve.com. For DJ Chris Nice and Dennis Barham, this is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to the AF Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, we out.